Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Today, my guests are Mick and Velan from the Patriot Party podcast. Before I bring them on, just a couple of announcements. I'm still on a road trip for just a couple of more days, but I'm still doing as many shows as possible while traveling. And you can always get new episodes free on Rockfin, Odyssey, and all podcast platforms. Go check us out on Rockfin. That's where you get our premium content. Check out all the podcasts we're featuring on the Forbidden Knowledge Network. You get those on our website, forbiddenknowledge.news, and follow us on Facebook. All those links are also in the description. Tonight, I want to welcome Mick and Velan from the Patriot Party podcast. They have been a dynamic duo for more than 30 years. Mick served for 21 years in the Army with 19 tours under his belt in special forces and military intelligence. He is one of the most decorated enlisted soldiers the Army has ever produced, with 4 Purple Hearts, a Silver Star, 3 Bronze Stars, and an Akram with Valor. Although he is now retired, he maintained his friends and sources on the inside and often gets information before anyone else. Velan ran a multi-million dollar business before masks and mandates changed her path to homeschool mom. She is constantly looking for the answer to the ultimate question, why. She puts the puzzle pieces together in ways that show an even bigger picture, as everything is connected. Together with their podcast, The Patriot Party, they are fighting for freedom and trying to show the country the truth about what's going on in today's world. Mick and Velan, welcome. How are you guys doing?
We're doing awesome, Chris. Thanks for having us on. It's an honor. I'm really excited to be here tonight.
Yeah, even if it is just a green screen, unfortunately.
Yeah. Our background doesn't like two people. So,
Zoom does not like two people.
Yeah. Zoom doesn't like two people. So
That's okay. You guys look great anyway. And it's definitely great to have you on. And man, I had a great time with you last time at our little gathering that we had last month. And you guys are doing amazing work with your podcast. You're bringing important information and really amazing insights to your audience. And now you can hopefully pick up some of my audience as well. So tonight's going to be very fun. It's going to be very interesting and educational for me, because we're going to be discussing some really cool topics like the Templars and Rh negative bloodlines, which I've actually not done that many shows on. I'm not even sure I've done any shows on the Templar. So this is going to be really fun. We're going to be talking about that and the connections to some of the events that could be unfolding right now. But this is your first time on. I'd love for you both to tell us what got you each started down your path.
Well, I guess you go first on that one, because you're the more recent converted.
Well, that's true. Although Mick did take a big red pill recently. So, and the red pill for us, it's not political. It's more, it's the awakening. It's understanding that all is not right with the world, that almost everything you've been taught and told is a lie, and trying to figure out what the truth is. I took my red pill. Well, I hate to say that I actually used to be a liberal.
She used to be a tree hugger.
I lived in Colorado for about 5 years, actually, and it was a blast. I had a great time. I didn't care about politics. I didn't really care about much of anything except just doing my thing, you know. And then when Mick and I got married, I mean, we grew up together, so I've known him literally my entire life. And we got married, and he was in the Army, and all of a sudden, I couldn't pay our mortgage because the government shut down. And I was like, whoa, wait, what? And then slowly but surely, I started to have the wool pulled up from over my eyes. And then COVID hit. And, you know, I think that woke up the majority of the people that are awake right now. I knew right off the bat that it was bullshit. You know, there was no way. And I was actually running a hotel at the time. And my boss had a family emergency and was out of town. And it was St. Patrick's Day, which is the biggest holiday of the year here in Savannah, where we are. It's a huge, amazing party. Millions of people come. It was not even a week before St. Patrick's Day. My boss is out of town. I'm running the show. And I get a call from corporate that we're shutting down. The hotel was staying open, but the entire city was shutting down. The state was shutting down. St. Patrick's Day was canceled. And I was actually heading out to the parade on an island close to where we live. And it took me 3 hours to get there because it's a 20-minute drive. not from traffic, just because I spent that much time driving around and wrapping my head around everything that I knew was coming. I saw the writing on the wall right off the bat. I knew the whole thing was a hoax. I knew it was all a setup for something. I didn't know what it was. And I had to figure out how to tell 200 people that they weren't going to have a job. And I knew the 8 weeks they were telling us was bullshit. And then all of a sudden I didn't have a job either. And it's kind of rolled from there. I went back for a while. I was furloughed for just over a year. And I went back. And when I went back, right off the bat, I told everybody at work, I was like, you know, here soon, you know, all you people that have been, that have taken this poison death jab, you're going to end up having to have a booster or it's not going to count. And then they're going to ask you for your papers, like we're in Nazi Germany, 1933. And they were like, oh, you're a crazy conspiracy theorist. And now they're all calling me and apologizing and telling me that I was right. So, you know, that's a huge, huge red pill. There's a whole nother backstory too that we'll get into a little bit later, because the other thing I've come to realize in this journey is that there is something much greater than all of us in place here. Even the ones that are trying to control everything right now, there's plans in place that were not made by man, and they're just being carried out. We're all along for the ride, and everything truly happens for a reason, and some of us are a big part of that reason, or a big part of implementing what's going to happen. And we're all starting to come together. We've met people in the past 6 months that we've known before, but
probably would have never met at the way we met them.
Yeah, absolutely.
To include yourself, I mean, you're kind of one of those people. I mean, we found out about your wife and everything, and found out about her background and her military background and where she comes army-wise, and come to find out that I happen to be in the same place at the same time as her ex and
her brother,
and found out that her brother didn't make it from what we pulled him from, but we were in the same place at the same point in time. It was quite odd to be. I've never been on that side of it before. I've never been where I was that guy where somebody said, hey, yeah, you know him? And I was like, that's an odd name. How do you know him? Oh, I'm his sister. And that kind of really threw me for a loop. Never, ever, ever thought that I'd ever be in that position where I had to answer to some of the questions she asked me. And it's not that it's embarrassing or anything. It's just not stuff you kind of want to tell people, you know, about the last moments of their loved ones' lives. It's it's a fucked up role to play. And you kind of sit there and you kind of shake and scratch your head and go, oh shit. Yeah. We were the guys that kind of went in to get him out. And, I knew he didn't make it. And, she asked some poignant questions that I had to answer, and it was a little odd, a little off-footing, I guess, because I never, ever thought I'd be in that position. Mine was completely opposite of hers. There was an incident that took place a bunch of years ago in Benghazi, I knew some information that the rest of America was not getting.
The world, really.
Asked the question of my father, who is a retired 2-star general. Asked him, I said, hey, Pop, what do I say about this? You know, because I know something that nobody else knows. And if I say it, I'm afraid of what will happen to me. But more or less, what I'm really afraid of is that the story never, ever gets out there. And he asked me in a ubiquitous way what I knew. And I tried to play it off like, well, it's nothing huge, but it's only like fucking gigantic. And it was. I mean, it was completely gigantic. I knew that everything about the video was bullshit. It was never about a video. We knew it was pre-planned the night of the attack. I knew it the day after the attack that it was pre-planned. I knew what the president was briefed the night before, which is, oh, this was not a pre-planned attack. I knew that everybody that had come out was directed to say that this was about a video, that this was about some video that made fun of Muhammad. So that's why they were all up in arms, which we all know is complete crap now, because we've all seen the movie. Everybody knows what took place. If you've seen 13 Hours, you know exactly what happened in Benghazi. And to understand what those guys went through and to sit there and say, wow, they were just kind of left to hung out and dry. I was, and it wasn't just you know, the guys that I knew that were on the ground there. It wasn't just the operators that were there defending the CIA folks. It was also the CIA folks, which really took me for a loop, because normally we don't leave them out strung out like that, especially a bunch of office folks that aren't used to fighting. There were a lot of people called upon that night to do a lot of things that they weren't supposed to do. And I was just like, wait a minute, why is this just getting swept under the rug? Why is this just being covered up? Why aren't we calling these people out? And as the screams got louder, I got louder about it and started telling other people, hey, look, this is not what happened. That is not what took place. And to a couple points where I almost got in a lot of trouble for it, and they told me, hey, look, you got to shut up. If you don't shut up, we're going to shut you up. And I took the writing on the wall, but I also knew that I had enough in the back. I had enough. I had taken off and made records elsewhere and say, go ahead, try and shut me up. I will make you all look like a bunch of fools. And I still have that stuff, and it's all in my I call it the oh shit box for when everything goes to aw shit. And then I can play my cards as I see fit, you know, and dealt to do, because there's just a lot of crap that a lot of people didn't know that I knew that was all BS, because what I was listening to on the news, oh, it's about a video. Oh, well, this guy said, no, they made fun of Muhammad. No, it had absolutely nothing to do with that. Benghazi was nothing about that. It was a coordinated and staged attack that was done against our embassy there, because they knew Chris Stevens was alone. And Chris Stevens, Sean Parnell, and the two operators, Tyrone Woods, and I'm trying to remember the other guy's name, but both of them, all four of them were killed that night. And it's just four people that, with what we had in the area, they should never have died. And that is the worst part of it, is I knew that there were four people hung out to dry, made to look like lepers. So it looked like something that Republicans did. And that's what really pissed me off, is they really pushed this. You know, the left and the right, they say, well, they're the same bird, two different wings.
Two wings of the same bird.
But my issue with that is that night, the left definitely tried to make it look like it was a right issue, that, oh, well, the right let this happen. No, that was not the case at all. And there was a lot of that name calling going on behind the scenes. And there's a lot of crap that just, I mean, if America was truly aware as to what took place that night, I mean, I showed her some of it. I didn't show her everything I knew, but
and
I said,
when he says he has evidence or that he knows these things, it's not just that he heard them. Like, he has physical printed evidence
that said that, like, hey, President, you know, POTUS was briefed this at this hour. I know exactly the hour in which he was briefed it. I knew exactly when he knew it. And I can tell you right now, all the bullshit that they said about it, that's all crap. He was never briefed that. He was never told that. The CIA folks on the ground never said that.
And mind you, up to that point, that was right before Mick retired. I mean, just before Mick retired.
Yeah, a couple years.
Not even. And yeah, I guess.
Yeah, it was 2016. Okay, it was 2012 years. Or 2011 that happened.
But he did 21 years in the service. He was Special Forces, CAG, military intelligence. He did 19 combat tours. Mick's literally done it all. He's seen it all. And he grew up in the military industrial complex, right? His dad was a general. His uncle's a general or godfather, whatever. One of the top generals. No, I was talking about Uncle Jack. You know, he's sixth generation army, and the five before him were all generals. This man grew up in the American military. He was completely immersed in the system. So Benghazi for him, I mean, ripped the wool off of his eyes. It was quite a wake-up call, because everything that he'd ever known in his entire life, everything that he grew up to believe about what the military was about and what this country was about, was all turned out to be a lie in one night.
Yeah, pretty much shattered. And all these stories that you hear, that, I mean, what took place that night, just to hear the recounted, you know, what everybody talks about, the movie was actually very, I was like, holy crap. I mean, that was, from what I understand, what took place that night, that is dead on, dead nuts on to everything, to the type of station chief that was present there that night, to everybody who did what they did. I mean, that is all dead nuts on.
For sure. Well, Mick, thank you so much for your service. And yeah, what a fucking hell of a way to find out. And the more you learn about our history and reality in general, the more heroes you lose from your childhood, the less people you look up to in government and politics and military. And it just, you know, all these things that are glamorized start to fall away. I mean, for me, you know, I wanted to go out there, ride a horse and, you know, yell about pedophiles, the government being corrupt and politicians trying to enslave us. But, you know, people have to be ready to hear this. And that's what I learned really quick in my journey, is that I can't go around and try and force this on people that aren't ready. But we got a lot of dots to cover tonight, and I want to know, where should we start, especially when it comes to the Templars and their history, because there's a lot of misunderstandings, first of all, and we have to connect this to what's going on today and what Velen was saying about the possible off-world connections to, you know, anything that could be going on beyond our perception. So where should we start with the Templars?
Well, I wish there was a way, like Corey does, and Corey lays out such a beautiful presentation of a timeline and everything else. I wish there was a way I could say a timeline. It really depends on which version of the Templars you want to hear about.
And now Mick's been studying Templars for years, just it always fascinated him. And I personally have a theory. I have a lot of theories, but one of my personal theories is that the time periods that most interest you represent your past lives, right? Mm-hmm. I fully believe in past life, reincarnation, maybe not for everybody, but I think that, you know, when you die, you return to the source and you have the option to come back again. Some people choose to come back in certain times to accomplish certain things. I think a lot of the people that are here now are in this time very specifically because of what's going on right now and what's to come. But so Mick has a very strong connections to the Templars, and he's always been fascinated by it, and he's read pretty much everything that he can find about the Templars. My Templar information is more family lore, right? My family, essentially I'm a Wittenbach, so, which is the royal family of Bavaria. And so I can trace my family line back almost 2000 years. Mick comes from royal family of Scottish royalty, which then got kicked out of Scotland and ended up in Ireland. So he can also trace his family back 2,000 years. And actually both all the royal bloodlines are connected. They're all intermarried at some point or another. Not so much the Celts as the European ones, but, I'm related to the Habsburgs and pretty much all the royal families down to the Romanovs. I mean, we're all related. I come down a bastard line. Before it was corrupted by the Rothschilds, because they deliberately intermarried into the royal family bloodlines with the object of corrupting them, right? They wanted to take over the royal families. They eliminated a lot of the bastards. They didn't catch us all, because back in the day, they didn't really keep records of, you know, where they were, who they were with, you should say. So a lot of the knowledge that we've pieced together has been a combination of things that we've researched, things that Mick studied, and family stories that have been passed down. So
like I said, it depends on which timeline you want. Because
we should start with your best understanding of the original purpose of the formation of the Templars.
Well, obviously the original,
that's an easy one.
That is actually very easy. Obviously it was to protect the road leading from Jerusalem back to Europe during the first and second.
That was their function, but that wasn't why they were.
No, that's why they were formed. They were actually, it started out as a group of knights. They were a group of knights from different kingdoms that started out protecting the road from Jerusalem back to Europe. And they during the First Crusade, and their original function was to protect that road. And as they grew in size, as more knights joined on, because they all saw the linear progression of this and what was happening on that road, because what was happening on that road was murder, death, destruction. I mean, it was pretty much all out slaughter. Anybody returning from Jerusalem back to England, was getting slaughtered on the way. Well, actually, it was France. It wasn't even England at the time in the First Crusade. They were going back to France, and on their way back, they were being slaughtered, basically all their treasure, everything being stolen, whatever they took with them, it was getting taken. The knights were basically formed to protect those roads. Now, what eventually happens, and this is where now, again, you get into the timeline. Which timeline do you want to follow? Because there is the Arthonian legend, which is that the knights were formed. The Templar knights were always there to protect Christian lands and Christian people. There is the second one, which is the Orgathonian idea of what the Knights were, which is more the French idea of what the Knights Templar were, and what the Knights Templar did. And then you have this third sect that came in much, much later. And this is the one I tend to agree with more, because there's, it's got so many different pieces of both the Arthur legend and the Orgathonian legend mixed into one. And I call that the Brown legend, because Dan Brown was not really too far off with all the research he had done into the Knights. So if you've watched any of the Tom Hanks movies, and I know
he's the top of the pedo list.
He's the top of the pedo list. I've got him on my list.
You mentioned pedophiles. One thing Mick did with his access is he compiled a list of known pedophiles throughout the government, Hollywood.
He's quite a bit.
It's scary.
I bet, man. It's terrifying.
So I know Tom Hanks is right up there, but one of the things Dan Brown did in his books, he did a lot of research into both the legends of the Knights. And he skipped over a couple key parts that I thought were huge. And the biggest one is obviously the misconception of what Sarah or S.A.R.A was. And it was actual treasure shipped upon a ship that the Knights transported at one point from Jerusalem back to France. And this ship had upon it cargo. And one of the things I found was an old,
manifest.
No, it wasn't even, it was a guy's written log, just a dude on the, he was a,
like the harbor master.
Yeah. He was a brother of one of the Benedictine orders of the monks that served out of this one church. And he saw the Knights come back on this one night. And they didn't bring their horses with them, which was really odd for him. Because if they didn't bring their horses with them, it meant all their horses died in battle. A knight's horse was taken care of better than the knight. Like, these horses are huge, too. These things are fierce.
They're old war horses.
They're gigantic. They stand about little over 12 feet at the shoulder. They're big damn horses. They probably weigh close to a ton each. So to get hit by one of these horses, you're talking about, you're taking the full brunt of a ton of mass just moving at you. These war horses were no joke. Well, for the knights to leave their horses, it meant that the horse died. In which case, the knights had a ceremony and there was a funeral for the horse. And these horses were carried off into the afterlife like you or I, if we were brother knights.
They didn't go to the glue factory.
No, horses were taken care of. They were cherished. One of the most cherished items on a knight was the horse. They always used to joke about what was the most cherished item, their sword or their horse. And the horse obviously took the reins. But the big part about it was that this guy, this monk, he saw them come back with no horses. And he thought that was odd. Then he looked at the cargo manifest of what was coming off of the ship. And the only bit of cargo, and he saw millions of boxes taken off the ship in one night. And he knows it was a night ship because he actually details the size. Because the big deal with the knight's hulls actually ran above the center mass on a boat, like where they had their captain's quarters and their crew quarters. Then the hull went above that. And it made like a really tall wall all the way around the ship where you couldn't see over it. And the reason was because back then in Jerusalem, going down, sailing around that part of the ocean, it was really violent. And they had water that just crashed into the hull all the time. And if you were on the deck, you were getting your ass beat by the sea. Well, they built these walls that were like twice that the size of a man, and they're recorded in history. And in this guy's manifesto that he left behind, he said that he noticed that all these boxes were coming off the boat all night long. And the only bit of cargo that was ever listed on the manifest, and it's all in French, but it's listed as S.A.R.A, which for the longest time didn't mean anything to me, didn't think anything about it.
But I knew who Sarah was.
Then we heard a story about Jesus Christ possibly having a child.
Jesus Christ did have a child. Jesus and Mary Magdalene were married. They were married. They were betrothed as children. Mary Magdalene was a princess.
And this, again, goes back to the Dan Brown story, because he had that part right. He was married. He did have, he literally had a companion, and that was Mary Magdalene. Mary Magdalene would have been considered his wife. She is listed in the, you can see her in the Last Supper, everybody. She had all of that right. All of that story, that part of the story is 100% right. The part that he doesn't have right is that they picked up with Mary's body and they left Jerusalem. No, the knights did not leave Jerusalem with Mary's body. The knights left Jerusalem. Well, they did leave Jerusalem with Mary's body, but they did not only leave with Mary's body. Sarah also accompanied them. Sarah was the name of Mary's and Jesus's daughter.
And that was actually their second child. They had a little boy before they had Sarah, and they recently found his tomb just outside of Jerusalem, maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
So Sarah's brought back to France. And in France, Sarah is then, all of a sudden, it's late September, 1319. October 13th, 1319, which also happens to be Friday the 13th, or October the 13th, 1319, the Pope declares all the knights in France, throughout all of Europe, heresy. They're all heretics. They're to be burnt at the stake. They're to be killed on sight. No Knights Templar will survive. All of a sudden, on October 12th, 1319, there is one ship that sails from the same port. And this brother monk, again, he records it, that this ship sailed. All he knows is it took off east. He has no idea where it was headed. Crew had no idea where they were going. They had planned for enough for 3 months, and that's all we know. The boat took off. They said that there was one piece of cargo, so it was one box that was hauled onto the ship, and there was one extra person, and this person was, as he listed it, mid-level in height, roughly, could have been a child, could have been a boy, could have been a girl, couldn't tell because it was the middle of the night. Again, they never did anything during daylight. Every time the knights left, they did everything in the middle of the night. Again, however, he did note one really strange fact. None of their horses were taken again, which is really weird. The knights never went anywhere without their horses. They always took their horses. None of their horses were taken. So this was really odd to this guy. And this has been now researched twice. I know a lot of people have looked into this. People have gone and found this guy's memoir. I'm trying to remember his name. His name is not coming back to me. But the second I remember it, you'll know, because I'm going to spit it out. And you'll be like, what the hell is that? That's the guy's name. Anyway. This guy has got another, so he has two total entries that really concern me, because nobody asked questions about S.A.R.A. And I began to ask questions myself to figure out what that exactly meant. Took me a little while to finally figure it out, but it does work out to a daughter. We did find when it was really, really interesting, because when they found the Dead Sea Scrolls, that's the first time you ever hear any mention of a child that Jesus had. And they mention the child's name, and in there, the name's S-A-R-A-H, not S-A-R-A, which I thought was really interesting that there was no H on the end of any of those transcripts that either that brother monk knew about or that was listed on any of their cargo, passengers. It was never listed as a passenger, always as an acronym.
Mind you that now, you know, the Templars were in 1200, 1300.
Yep.
Right. Obviously, that was 1,000, 1300 years after Jesus died, after Sarah. But one of their primary functions became to protect the bloodline. So Sarah had a child, you know, that child had a child, that child had a child, and they always named the daughter Sarah. So Sarah passed all the way down. So when the knights actually evacuated the last Sarah from Jerusalem, and they went to France with her, she actually founded what they called the Coptic Christians, right? Which is, they say, the truest sect of Christianity to Jesus' teachings. And the Coptic Christians were also completely destroyed, obliterated by the Roman Catholic Church. Massacred. It was a horrible massacre. But not before Sarah married into the French royal family. So, and that's where the Rh negative blood comes in. So,
well, if you following that story, that would be accurate up until the 13th, obviously October the 13th. I mean, that is obviously 1319, which is Friday the 13th, which is what we all despise. Isn't it weird how we have
genetic memory of how horrible Friday the 13th was? That's why we still talk about it to this day, 1,000 years later.
Don't we all find it a little weird that we find October the 13th such a bad day,
Friday the 13th, yeah.
Even if it's not a number, we just find Friday the 13th such a bad day. So this moves forward. And as she said, you know, Sarah did marry into the bloodlines. Now, this is much after the Friday the 13th, but it's weird because it happened in such a way that she ended up back in the European bloodlines, which is just odd because why would you come back if you were hunted at one point unless you're no longer hunted, unless they already thought they killed you, which now you start getting into, because essentially the Templar, if you look at the Templar, they kind of shift roles. They went away from, so first part about that, this is the most interesting part. And this really started just here recently. I started watching Curse of Oak Island. A friend of mine turned me on and said, hey, you need to start watching The Curse of Oak Island. And I said, why is that? He said, well, they started finding Templar bits on Oak Island. That would have been about the same time that they probably made landfall in Nova Scotia. That wouldn't be odd to me to find out that maybe Sarah's tomb or Mary's tomb has been moved, and that's where it is now. Everybody who thinks that the cup or the cup of life is a chalice, it's not. It is a bloodline. It has been a bloodline. This now goes into Grail lore. Now we start talking about Arthonian legends and with Arthur and what King Arthur thought the Grail was as to what everybody, but essentially it is not a cup. It is a bloodline. There's plenty of Grail experts out there that will tell you it's not about a cup, it's about a bloodline. It's all about Jesus's bloodline, because if we were to show that Jesus was man, it eliminates any part of him, and this is kind of what the Council of Nicaea did. They eliminated any part of showing that Jesus was a man. They destroyed it, and they had to make Jesus look like a god. Does it make him a god or not is immaterial. I think he can be both. I don't see why he couldn't be both. Why not? But according to all of everything I've ever read, the Nicene Council and everything that took place after the Council of Nicaea, and there's three more councils of Nicaea that took place before they finally agreed as to what Catholics would believe, which I'm a Catholic, so of course I'm going to look into that.
Yeah.
And three more councils of it, and it was finally King James who said, nope, this is what we're going to believe. This is what it is. Stop with all the other bullshit. We're done. And what you got today is a whole bunch of bastardized texts that were not actually part of the original Bible. Which,
so, well, hold on.
Then we get into
what he said right there, that the Catholic or the Council of Nicaea and King James decided what Catholics were going to believe.
Yeah, for sure.
They were controlling thought back then, and it's never stopped. They've used the same playbook for 2,000 years to try and control our thoughts and our actions and everything that we do. So
you fast forward to the actual creation of the Catholic Church, which obviously happened under King James. And King James originally was a pagan. And all of that is true. The paganism, all of that stuff, when the pagan lords came down and that kind of eliminated the pagan belief and Christianity sprung up and took hold in England and took hold in France, Christianity was the one where they talked about the witch's hammer, where they were throwing women, and they were going after specific women. They were looking for a bloodline because they were completely convinced that Sarah made it out of Jerusalem. So now they're looking for this individual child who is now reproduced, not more than once, but actually a dozen times, and has reproduced on a secular level, if you will, because she had been bred into the king line, because they thought, what better way to hide a child than to have them, you know, essentially marry into royalty. And now that bloodline is protected because it's royalty. Who's going to let their king and queen get slaughtered? Nobody. So the knights actually made moves to get Sarah introduced to a prince who she eventually marries and in France, and that carries on in that bloodline. But all and to say that all the bloodlines are connected, it is quite comical because it is. When you start looking at all the royal, the original royal bloodlines, the Celts, the Germanians, you had the French, the Germanians, the Italians, the Celts, the Saudis, the House of Saud, that was actually the biggest one. The Eastern European, which I'm trying to remember exactly, Mongolians would be a part of that, because back then Mongolians were around still. So you still had the Mongolians and you still had the Japanese. If you look at all of the bloodlines then, that's where you get into the Rh negative factor that shows up in all of those bloodlines. Every single one of those bloodlines has an Rh negative factor, which, as we know, Rh negative is?
So Rh negative is only, well, only they say 10 to 15% of the population of the entire world is Rh negative. I think at this point, it's probably closer to about 5%. So the way they determined Rh negative blood, or the way they discovered it in the first place, early 40s, 1940s, something like that.
Yeah, the rhesus, rhesus monkeys.
Yeah, from the rhesus monkeys. So the rhesus monkey has a protein on their blood that is the same in humans, or in most humans, but 10% of the population does not have this protein, this Rh factor. So that's actually how they determined evolution, or how they said they proved evolution, because we have the same, or most everyone has the same protein on their blood as the rhesus monkey. So therefore, we must have evolved from rhesus monkeys. So that bears the question, where do I come from? Because I'm Rh negative. So
she doesn't have that protein.
Exactly. I didn't descend from monkeys. And in evolution, you don't lose things. You add things, right? You don't lose genes. You don't lose proteins. You gain them. That's how evolution works. That's
so she's an alien.
So, yeah. So they say I'm an alien. Or sometimes the crazy thing about Rh negatives, first off, we tend to be highly allergic to everything synthetic, which is why I say that I think it's down to only 5% of the population now, because the jab being most definitely synthetic, I would be very interested to see the blood types of those people that died very quickly after receiving the jab, because I would suppose that most of them are probably Rh negative, because we are allergic to everything synthetic. We also are high energy conduits. So I, for example, I have a higher personal electromagnetic field than most people. I can't wear a watch.
I can't buy her a watch.
Yeah. I kill a watch battery. I drain a watch battery in less than a day.
She drained a Ryobi battery just by touching it.
Yeah.
So a $200 Ryobi battery, yeah. She literally destroyed it just by touching it.
I drained that. I drained my car battery, actually. The Ryobi battery cost more to replace than the car battery. I've been known to pop light bulbs just touching them. So it's crazy. I used to suck up energy. Now I actually put out energy because something's changed inside me, but we'll get to that in a little bit.
Now, I want to stop you for a second. Now, I've heard of the Rh negative blood when it comes to, like you said, aliens. Now, I know that there is also a theory about a more spiritual aspect of it, to where, you know, not necessarily alien, but more of a kind of pure cosmic type of bloodline. But I want to go, before we get too far into the Rh negative, do we know at all if this bloodline, that the Rh, is this what you're referring to, that that Jesus and his bloodline was, or Sarah, who had the Rh negative?
We believe that the females carried, Mary Magdalene carried an Rh negative factor in her blood, we believe. We're not sure. Okay. We don't have her blood to actually test, but we believe that it comes from one side of the family. Now, whether it came from Mary Magdalene or it came from Jesus is unknown.
Or both.
There is a very big possibility, considering she was pregnant twice back then, because you got to understand, one of the things that happens if you are, for instance, I'm Rh positive, even though I do come from a lineage of Rh negative folks. Most of my family is Rh negative. She's Rh negative. For us to have a child, she has to go get a shot her 28th week of pregnancy. And we, trust me, we know this because it's happened twice now. She had to go get a Rogam shot to help produce the same protein so that the baby or the embryonic cell actually continues to exist and evolve in her body.
Because if otherwise, not, it will eject it. Yeah, my body thinks that the the alien growing inside me is actually an alien, and I'll spontaneously abort without this special shot, which they developed in the 50s, which is one of the reasons why all of the royal families intermarried so much. Because if an Rh woman gives birth or gets pregnant by an Rh positive man, then she will abort. She will miscarry every single time.
Okay, this is getting interesting. Now, I got to stop you for a second. So you're saying that the elites, like these, you know, these bloodlines, these elite royal bloodlines, that is why they're inbreeding, is because they don't want to, you know, lose child, among other things, correct? That's fucking crazy.
That's exactly correct. It, just out of preservation of the bloodline, because they could not give birth, an Rh negative woman could not give birth to a baby with an Rh positive man. It's just physically impossible. We are different genetic races. Okay.
So if you think about the inbreeding place at a,
let me get to that. Let me highlight that real quick. Okay. Right. Because everyone, they use things to divide us, right? They use politics, they use race, they use religion, they use all these things to divide us. And they say that black people and white people are two different races. That is not true. There are two races on this planet, Rh negatives and Rh positives. And that's it.
Man. That is crazy. Now,
okay, now hold on. There is even a crazier part to this, because there is some truth to that. Because one of the things after Solomon's Temple was raided and secluded, one of the things that was taken was a vial or a chalice. There was a chalice removed, and supposedly it held the last little blood remaining of Jesus Christ. Supposedly it was there. That's what everybody considers the Grail. However, the Grail was also considered to be Mary's body, because obviously it produced another child, and it was willing to take on the, you know, whether you believe in God or not, it was willing to take on the Holy Spirit at that point and conceive another child. From God, essentially, where they're getting it. I mean, because Jesus wasn't really, I mean, he was a man, yes, but he was also holy. If you really boil it all down, he was a man who had needs, and he met his needs, and her body was willing to take on that Holy Spirit, so to speak. So this cup of blood that left King Solomon's temple and made its way back to France, supposedly made it back there in it was just around 13. It was the same time frame that the Templars made it back, but it went to a church. And this church, if you look at it today, it looks like a castle, everything around it. And it's now monks hold it. And supposedly it's one of those last remaining areas that nobody's been ever able to examine it. Supposedly this cup remains there. It's in the middle of this place in Alestine, France. And there is, if you look all the way around, there's a moat all the way around. It looks just like a knight's fort. Supposedly, it is an old Templar last bastion. Now it's a church and a monastery where monks live there. They protect what's inside it. But right in the center of it, if you look from Google Images, for instance, there is a weird, like, little shaped dome right in the center of it. It's got like a tower above it. And supposedly inside that little place right there, there is a cup. And that cup holds what many think is the last remaining blood of Jesus Christ. Now, over time, do I believe that it's still the same? No, I think it's been diluted probably year after year. They probably added water to it, whatever, to keep it wet. There's been some dilution to it. Do I believe there's a cup there? I believe there may be. It may be the last chalice that was, featured in everything else, the Last Supper and everything else that Jesus talks about.
But it's not the Holy Grail.
Holy Grail. It's not what everybody else, like Catholics, have become to believe that, you know, oh, we look at a mystical cup. We don't. But it's really all about the bloodline. It's something the church has tried to keep quiet for centuries. And now, only recently, you know, Dan Brown, when he wrote his books, a lot of people thought, oh, he's going to get killed. There was a lot of Grail historians out there that thought, oh, Dan Brown's going to die, because he's telling a story that is not accepted by not only Grail historians and people who are dead set in the Arthonian legend that believe, oh, it's a chalice. It was a chalice that caught Jesus's blood. And there were three knights that were kept there to protect it and blah, blah, blah. That did happen. We're not disagreeing that that happened, but we also don't believe that that chalice remained in Jerusalem like everybody claims. We believe it moved out a lot later than when the Knights left, and the Knights brought, I mean, they were so dead set on leaving. It was crazy. There's documents out there of them riding to a port in Jerusalem, and they got off their horses and they walked on the boat and they said, let's go. And they were asked like five times by their, you know, Muslim slaves that were sitting outside. They were like, don't you want us to put the horses on board? No, let's go. It'll take too long. We have to leave now. And they get on the fucking horse. They get on the boat and they're gone. That's it. And that is so unlike anything they've ever done before. To leave their horses behind is just the crux to my argument, I guess, because they don't do that. They never did that. And this one, why would you just leave all of the sudden? You up and left. You dug all night in King Solomon's tomb. You found something. You took it out of there. Don't get me wrong. It's not one or two boxes. They took a bunch of boxes. But the only one they marked on the manifest was Sarah, which to me blows my mind, because how else do we look at that unless you have Mary's sarcophagus, is what I'm thinking. You have Mary's sarcophagus. And at a minimum, you have the next bloodline. You have the next one in the bloodline. And they're removing both from Jerusalem, who at the time, we can't disagree, the Muslims were trying to do everything in their power to eliminate the Christians that were in Israel or in Jerusalem. I have to argue with anybody that tells me any different on that, because that's what the Muslims were sent there to do. Now, understand,
and
at that point,
was before Paul corrupted the memory of Mary Magdalene. So she was still treated like Jesus, as Jesus's wife, right? Her memory was held up because we were always supposed to be a matriarchal society, right? It's always the women who really have the true power. We let you guys think that you're running the world, but the true power lies with the women.
I've always said that the power's in the P.
But that's both on good and evil, right? Because I'm sorry, but without women, none of you would ever exist. Just what it is, right? And the greatest evil in the world, although we point at people like Bill Gates, George Soros, there's some very powerful women behind them, right? If you think Melinda Gates isn't running the show, you've got something else coming. Evelyn de Rothschild, she is a big, big power player.
She was huge.
Running the evil side. And the rest of it is all, again, you know, it's easier to let you guys do what you want and let us control things and make you think you're in charge.
And the crazy part, and it goes back to something, you know, we just talked about it not too long ago on one of our shows. Corey brought up a really good point, something I hadn't thought about in years, and I don't know why I haven't thought about it, but all of a sudden when Corey talked to us on the 22nd,
mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, that guy's a walking encyclopedia about JFK. But when we started talking and I started putting some old pieces together of something I thought about a long time ago, and I brought this up to Veland, and I said, look at this. What if, and I'm spitballing here, but erase everything you know about history from JFK on to today. Just erase everything you know, right? Go back to JFK. Do you remember any part of his platform? Corey knows this like backwards and forwards, and I'm sure you know it because you probably have been subject to it because you've listen to Corey.
Yeah, so, I'm nowhere near as well versed as him, but I've had him on a few times, and I've known a little bit about it.
You know that that JFK was trying to eliminate Israel from everything that was.
Of course.
Israel was about to get sectioned out. The CIA was no longer going to have any power because JFK said, look, we're not going into Vietnam. I'm going to pull everybody back to the States. Does that sound familiar? Does that sound like, hey, I'm trying to pull everybody back to the U.S., kind of like somebody else just recently?
America first, right. Close the borders.
Sounds like,
you know,
hey, we're going to
protect our country.
He's like, I'm going to take care of America.
Yeah.
And so let's just say for one second that he was the last legitimately elected president. How does that change everything you know about history, JFK passed? That changes everything. That means everybody else was installed. Well, then everybody brought to me, well, you're a big Trump supporter. How does that fit with Trump? And I said, what if Trump, just I'm spitballing here, but what if Trump was like what Robin Williams was in that movie when he won the election? Like all of a sudden, suddenly of all, the machines malfunctioned and Donald Trump won the presidency. How does that change everything? Because you can't, I'm sorry, you can't change the look of surprise or the look of foul ought that we saw in, for instance, Hillary, the night that she, or the morning that she had to concede in her big purple dress. And she was wearing purple, which was a very telltale color. And I don't know how many people noticed that, but purple being worn on a day such as that is not exactly the color you wear.
No, purple is the color of celebration and royalty.
Yeah. And it, for her to wear purple out like she did, like Grape Ape, I was kind of like, wow, that's kind of a ding dong that kind of set off bells and whistles in my head. Like something else is going on here. Like, this shouldn't be happening to me is the take I took from that. And if you apply all of that to what has happened and you look, they can't kill Trump because that means they'd have to do what they did to JFK. And they can't do that these days because everybody's got a damn cell phone. Everybody's got some way of taking a picture. So they couldn't do that to Trump. So how do you kill Trump without doing that? You murder him through the media. You murder him through all his backroom deals. You murder him through what you consider a conspiracy in Russia.
But there's a very good possibility that he was installed as well, because he is also bloodline. He is also related to
this
all of
true.
Them, right? So, I mean, he could be controlled opposition because they had to bring the rest of us around.
Yeah, that's the way I lean, is that he was probably controlled opposition, but you know, I don't know for sure and I don't claim to. I just don't trust anyone that can get into those levels, and I don't trust his previous associations. I mean, you know, his stance with Israel, things of that nature. I mean, there's plenty of red flags when it comes to it, but then again, he's done some things that make me question a lot of things as far as his whole presidency. So that's one of those that I'm still up in the air about, but I still don't trust him at all.
So I'm on the fence about that, but hold on. So
one of the ones that blew her mind when I brought this up, right? So Jacqueline Onassis Kennedy, right? She obviously married Onassis. Onassis was a big player
Jacqueline
in Europe.
Kennedy Onassis.
And
yeah.
he was a old oil tycoon, big time money, old oil tycoon. He happened to invest shortly after meeting Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, as I was just corrected by my wife. He happened to invest in a small little company called the Soros Foundation. George Soros would not be here today had JFK not been assassinated, because Onassis would never have invested in the Soros Corporation back then in the 60s when he did, after meeting Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, which I find very happenstance. It was just very odd. I was like, wow, that's really interesting. And then, did you ever hear how he died? Onassis, that is, not obviously Soros, because he's still alive.
Is he, though?
Onassis died in a very odd car accident.
Hmm.
It was very odd because it was in his driveway. Which is like, wait a minute.
That's like getting suicided with two in the back of the head.
Thank you.
Right.
So I'm just saying, there's a lot of things that get real questionable there. But to say that this is not connected. So, and the reason I bring this up, especially with the Templar and the bloodlines, is because there's one thing that the Templar always protected. They always protected people was their big thing. But after all of that kind of subsided and they took what they knew that they had and they were protecting the bloodline, they always protected the bloodline. They were always about the bloodline. You can go back in history. Doesn't matter where, the Templar are always there. And the Templars still exist today. They're still a sect of the Roman Catholic Order. They're still here. They're out there. I'm not one of them, but they
not
are
in this
there.
Lifetime, anyway.
They are there. And it's crazy to think that even after all of this time, they're still here. They're not a secret society like everybody claims. They're actually very open. But it's odd that they're still here and they still consider themselves knights. I just find that part of it odd. Now, you have the Knights of Columbus and the Catholic Order, and that has nothing to do with the Templar. I am a Knight of Columbus. I can tell you right now that we have nothing to do with the Templars. And then you have the Templars. The Templars, it's a lot harder to get in there. I have not been able to crease that fold yet. I'd love to get in there just because I love the Templars because I used to read the comic books way, way back in the day, and they had the little tiny boxes, and I read the comic books about the Templar, and I loved the stories to hear about the Templar, what the Templar did on all of their journeys, everywhere they went, to include even some of the comic books got into the fact that they came to the New World, the New World being America. Well, according to a lot of the old comic books, they came to the New World to hide Mary's sarcophagus and to hide Sarah. And Sarah was bred in over here as well. So if you think about that.
Into the Cherokee, actually.
Yeah, because now you have an American Indian part of this. This all of a sudden starts connecting continents across the earth, which is really crazy because now you're elongating the bloodline. So the bloodline's going on even further. And if you don't think that the knights would encourage this type of behavior, absolutely you would be wrong. Because the knights would have been right there going, please keep it going. Because the more and more there are of you, the less and less we have to protect just one. We can then just let the order deal with all of the ones across the earth.
So you said she bred into the Cherokee?
Correct.
So
that's interesting.
So you wonder,
Cherokee or the Waltamathaw, I believe is what they call themselves, the Waltamathaw Indians. They were before the Cherokee.
Actually, one of my best friends is a Cherokee princess.
They existed.
And she is also Rh negative, and she has similar family stories to my family stories. So
they existed in northeastern Canada. It was the Waltamaw. They became the Cherokee, but it was what they were before they were the Cherokee. And this Indian sect, yes, she was bred essentially into the Cherokee.
Well, her children. So you were asking, you want to know where the Rh negative bloodlines come from, right? And there's so many questions about this. Right. And I watched a very dry, like 6 hour long video on genetics and, you know, tracing all the genetics back to the original source. It was the driest thing I've ever seen. But right in the middle of it was a very interesting part. And it's the reason I watched the whole thing, because I was hoping to get more out of it. But it traces back. Because, you know, they say that everyone originally came from, Africa, Egypt area, right? Yeah. And that's not actually true. Because in this presentation, I think it was done by Cornell, actually.
We found out that it actually came from Chad.
There are 13 points of origin across the world. 13 places that they can specifically pinpoint that different people came from. All at the same time, okay? And they're the 13 original Rh negative bloodlines, and they trace the Rh negative back to these. One of them is in Stuttgart, Germany. There's another one here in North America where the Cherokee are. They're in the Celtic Islands, some in Asia, in Japan, actually.
You had the French,
Saudi.
You had the Saudi, had King Saud, you had Japanese,
but the original
Mongolian
13 bloodline. So, you know, the question is, were they Nephilim? You know, were they fallen angels that bred with people here? If you go the biblical route, that's a possibility. Were they aliens? Are Rh positive people the result of a previous transhumanism experiment where they bred people to be out of monkeys to be their slaves? That's another possibility. Me, I think that aliens, angels, demons, they're all the same. They're all interdimensional creatures. They're all different aspects of the same thing. So I think the Rh negative is the original bloodline. Where it came from, I can't know. I can only guess. But
I don't think anybody knows.
Yeah, of course not. But I do know what it brings with it. So, and more than just, you know, the energy thing and having difficulty having children, having to find the right people to breed with without medical intervention. There's a lot more to the Rh negative than that. So, there's a reason that they've been trying to kill us. And I think the jab is
Well, yeah, that's what I was just going to get into, because we got a few minutes left and I want to find out how you guys feel this all connects to what's going on now with the jab, with our dystopian future, with all the mandates, with everything going. Now we got Omicron, you know, it makes me think of a psychiatrist with the guy sitting on the couch. Is Omicron in the room with you? Can you see him? You know, this it's fucking nuts. But how do you guys think all this connects to, you know, what we've been talking about with the Rh negative, the Templars, and basically trying to kill off everybody and start a slave society?
So I actually think we're in biblical revelations, and I think that the deep state cabal elite, whatever you want to call them, have been manipulating situations to mirror biblical events to bring about the end, right? To bring about the end so that they can change it and that they win. But God knows more, right? God knows better. Whatever you call God, if you call it the source or the wizard behind the curtain, whatever it is, it's the thing that connects us all, right? If you've ever done any kind of psychedelic drugs, hallucinogenics, you see the energy that connects us all. That energy connects us all to God and connects us all to each other. That is the source, right? I think the jab disconnects you from the source at the genetic level. So when you break down the meaning of words, DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid, and you break it down into the root words, dio is God, oxy is one, ribo could mean truth or translator, but in this case it's truth, nucleic is inside, and acid is fire. So DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid, translates to the truth of the one God in the fire inside. RNA, or ribonucleic acid, is the translator to the fire inside. mRNA, your messenger, goes between the translator and the truth of the one God inside you, back and forth, bringing that message back and forth. When you change the message, what happens? You're disconnected from the source. God can no longer feel your energy. You are no longer connected directly to God through your energy, through the source, because the message has changed. So your name is no longer written in the book of life. And when the end comes, or the beginning, I like to think of it as the beginning of something new, because there is no end. There can be no end, right? Nothing can be created or destroyed. What is here has always been and always will be. It just changes form.
Now, Bielin, but you know, a lot of people are going to be like, that's fucking nuts. But when you look at a few years ago at the TED Talk Bill Gates gave about trying to vaccinate people against spirituality.
Yeah,
this was an actual talk this dude gave, okay? So it's not that far-fetched. And I've heard many, many other people theorize about this before. And I happen to think the same thing. I think they're trying to get rid of our connection to source, you know?
Yes. There's a lot of people that have come to the same conclusion through different paths. There have been priests and monks that have come out and said that after they've gotten the jab, they are not able to hear God anymore. They're not able to talk to God. Some of them have been physically unable to pray, and it's taken 40 days and 40 nights for them to get back to the source. And that is very important, 40 days and 40 nights. I can tell you that the Son of God will be born again, and soon, in the summer, actually. I'm not sure if the rapture will occur before then or after then, but I do know that when it happens, they're going to try and fake some kind of an alien invasion to blame it on aliens instead of God. But things are only going to get worse from here, right? If you think things have been bad to date, be prepared, because they're going to get worse. This is the time, and I never understood what this meant until recently, when they say to put on the armor of God, because I believed in God in a visceral way, right? I believed he was there. I understood there was something greater than all of us. I mean, I actually have two crazy bloodlines. My great-great-grandmother is Maria Orsic, who is the founder of the Viril Society.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I can show you a picture that would...
I look
that's crazy.
Like
drop her fucking jaw.
I look just like her.
Wow.
And then my great-grandfather was King Ludwig of Bavaria. Maria Orsic actually warned my grandfather that they were coming for him during the just before the Holocaust, and to get out of Austria because they were coming for his family, because he was an elite royal bloodline before it was corrupted. He was a bastard bloodline. His grandfather, because King Ludwig is my great great grandfather. So his grandfather.
So just to give you an idea, take a good look at Velen real quick. Just take a good look at her, okay?
Right.
Now I'm going to show you something. If you can see it, I hope you can.
Got a glare right there.
Let's see.
I think your light's shining right on that.
Yeah, of course it is.
Well, what you do, should send me a picture, and I'm going to pop it up right whenever you show me the phone.
I'll get it to you.
I'll edit it right over there.
It's pretty crazy.
It's a scary picture. It's
But yeah, it looks just like me. So she warned my grandfather to get his family out of Bavaria. My grandfather was in love with her daughter, my grandmother, who he ended up obviously marrying. He actually went back to Germany after he left. He joined the American Army. Actually, he joined the OSS, as I later found out. And he went back to Germany in the middle of the war and snatched my grandmother out of there and sent her back to the States. Which most people think that were dead at this point. They believe my grandfather died. They believed that my grandmother, that Marie Orsic's baby, died. But when I got the big message that I received, I was told that it wasn't about the Orsic bloodline. It was about the Jesus bloodline. I will say that angels are real, and they've been talking to people. I know this from personal experience. God is trying to talk to you right now. God is trying to talk to all of us. And I was, again, never a hugely religious person until I had this crazy experience that Mick didn't even believe for the longest time, until I told him things that he said there was no way I could possibly know. And I'll say that now that the Spirit of God has filled me up so much, it's like it flows out of me all the time, right? The armor of God is that faith, that belief that you are here for something greater, that there is a purpose to your life, that you are placed here in this time and in this place for a reason. And there's 144,000 of us, the remnant, that will stay to fight after everyone else is gone, that will stay here to fight the evil, that we have already given up our free will before we came to this life, before we came to this time and this place. We've already been judged, and so we don't need to be judged again. And we're fighting. And I found the way to figure out who is amongst us. So let me ask you this. Have you ever been woken up by the sound of a deep bell in the middle of the night, like a gong?
I'm not sure, but I've had angelic contact as well. So I've had plenty of my own conversations with our cosmic friends. So yes, I do know that with the feeling and the psychic communication, and I've had plenty of messages myself. So I'm part of the club there.
So the message that I got is to tell my truth, to tell the truth as much as people would listen. And I got this message well after we started our podcast, but I realized that we were led to start our podcast, and we're just along for the ride. And we've become moderately successful, not through anything that we've done. We just stuck a microphone on the side of a computer and started talking, right? We felt we had something to say. And we've met all these amazing people, and we've ended up at these huge events, and it's blown up. We've gotten these awesome guests, and we talk about these fantastic subjects. And none of it is us, right? It's all... We're just along for the ride. It's just the path that we were led down. We just have to follow our path, because that path is going to come to an end soon. So I would say everybody just needs to be prepared. And when I say be prepared, I don't just mean, you know, buying land and starting a garden, getting some chickens. We're doing that. But you have to be physically and mentally prepared and spiritually prepared, because a lot of people are going to die. A lot of people have already died, and a lot of people are dying, and people don't even realize it because it's being covered up so much. That's a really traumatic thing for everyone to go through. And there's a lot of children that are going to be left behind. That is just as traumatic. What's going to happen to them? Are we going to let the state raise them and indoctrinate them? I don't think so. We have a big fight on our hands coming up that takes a lot of mental preparation. And the spiritual preparation, you know, everybody right now is being bombarded. I'm sure you felt the energy change last year and again in the summer, specifically last December when the Star of Jesus was visible in the sky, the Star of Bethlehem, for the first time in 682 years. And then over the summer, we had what's called the Eye of God, where that there was a configuration of a star and a planet that looks like, it actually looks like the symbol from the communist flag, and it's called the Eye of God, and then
it's the Muslim flag.
Okay.
The devil's eye is what it's called.
Well, when it's above, it's the Eye of God, and then as the star goes below, it's below the moon, it's called the devil's eye. And that, again, is an indicator that we are in the end times, that something is coming.
In the beginning of tribulations. If you read the Bible and you actually take it by word, you look at the beginning of tribulations, a couple of things that they talk about is what was seen, what was above will be below, and what will be below will be above. And one of the things they're referring to is what the three kings saw the night that they rode off into the desert, shut their houses down and set all their slaves free and rolled off looking for Jesus. Well, now they're saying we're going to see the same thing, and then shortly thereafter we will see the opposite of what we saw before that. And we have seen both of those things so far if you're following biblical scholars and everything else. Now, again, I'm always reminded, and I'm always remiss to be the first one to say, when we say these things, also remember that a council of 23 men who were considered lords at the time met about this shit and said that, hey, this is what's going to be in the printed version. Understand that there's a whole separate Bible out there, the Gnostic Gospels. They're all out there. You have to read the Gnostic Gospels as well. There's a lot of people that don't read the Gnostic Gospels. Sure. I'm one of the few Catholics that will say, honestly, outright and forefront, I've read the Gnostic Gospels. Not because I believe that the Gnostic Gospels are what actually took place, but I believe that they add to shit that you never even knew of. Judas wrote a gospel. Judas, the guy who betrayed Jesus, wrote a gospel. Before he betrayed Jesus, he wrote a gospel about Jesus's life and what Jesus did. Again, supporting the facts that are already in evidence that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John all wrote. They all wrote their own gospels. Judas wrote a gospel. Mary Magdalene wrote a gospel about Jesus. She talks about how he loved her more than he loved any of the other disciples. That is a fucking true testament to the fact, and she actually refers to, they refer to each other as, not companions, but, oh shit, I can't remember.
It's essentially that.
It's marriage, essentially,
yeah,
back then.
Yeah, the word for spouse.
Mm-hmm. It's essentially, she refers to Jesus as her spouse within her own gospel. That is, in and out of itself shows you that, yes, there was something else going on there that, again, Dan Brown picked up on. He relayed in his own books and his movies. Also, really great stuff. I mean, Dan Brown did a lot of research. He really did. And then he crafted his own story into it. Don't get me wrong, the story that he crafted is complete crap, but the historical reference that he uses is right on the money. And it is amazing what he brings up. The Rose Line, what the Rose Line means to not only the Templar, but what it means to the bloodlines. What it means, how it divided bloodlines at one point in time in this culture. You have to look at all geographical regions that stopped the bloodline. There are all sorts of different things that divided the bloodline. The Rose Line, however you want to look
Holocaust
at it.
The Holocaust was primarily to kill as many of the bastard bloodline as they could find.
Because Israel
primary focus to kill the Jews. That was a side benefit in Hitler's mind, per se. And I don't believe as many Jewish people were killed as what they say, because it's just like how, you know, they rolled out 7 billion vaccines in under a year. It's not physically possible, right? It just doesn't happen that way. So the Holocaust was designed to hunt down the bastard bloodlines. And just like the children, the descendants of Jesus and Mary were here to marry into those other bloodlines, those other 13 original bloodlines, right? They are the 14th bloodline. They married into the other bloodlines to try and uncorrupt them, if you will, right? Bring them away from the dark, bring them back to the light, bring them back to God. And unfortunately, they were not successful because, you know, the Rothschilds took the same playbook and did the same thing, but the opposite way. So it's really now just we bastards that are left of the good blood.
And one of the crazy parts about the bloodlines, that's a tough one to follow, but if you look at, like, for instance, Bill Gates. Bill Gates was not one of those, you know, he wasn't on his own independently wealthy. He eventually
became... Bill
Gates'
mother was a Maxwell, and he is cousins with Ghislaine, I'm just saying.
That's part of it, but if you look at also who he married, if if you think that that was not scripted, you're higher than a kite, because that was definitely scripted, and that was a scripted for a very, very good reason. His wife was of the Rothschilds bloodline. She is of a, she's a Rothschild descendant. She was a descendant of Mary DeWitt. She's one of the big ones. And to believe for a second that those two are not somehow connected, or that was not pre-planned, you got to be crazy.
Everything is planned. Everything has been planned for hundreds of years. This whole thing, this the mRNA vaccine, that's been planned since... I mean, the vaccine itself, I mean, this the rollout of this particular mRNA vaccine has been planned since...
2015, from what
earlier than that.
Well, I mean, we can prove.
No, Fauci started talking about this in the 80s with HIV. So it's been planned since then. They started developing it in 2012. I want to say Dr. Ott claimed that when you had that homeless guy in Miami that ate the face off the other guy, that he was actually, they were testing the vaccine on him at the time, and that's why he went cannibal, right? Isn't that crazy? They patented it back in, like 2005.
Well, 2015 it was patented as
a veterinary vaccine first. So they've been developing this forever. Everything that's happened in the past year has been specifically to inoculate the entire population of the world for control. That's
scripted.
It for compliance, to decimate your VMAT2 gene, which is the one that connects you to God, the one that Bill Gates was talking about, to disconnect you from the source, killing off 70% of the people that take it. Again, that's a side Benny for them. They're all about control. That's it. They're all about control.
Think about it. How easy was it for them to get freaking, masks on people's faces?
Oh yeah, I mean, within a day people were wearing face muzzles. I mean, it's really fascinating, and it's terrifying to see what's going on right now. But I'm wondering if you think that you were saying that there's people basically coming online every day and realizing, what's going on and their purpose. And there's only going to be a select few that are going to be doing so. And to me, it seems like those that, if you aren't seeing what's going on right now, if you aren't woken up and you're not at least getting a hold of what you should be doing to counter this, I think it may be almost too late, because things have been accelerating. And I don't know. I don't feel like they're winning. I think like they're throwing this Omicron at us. And I think that they feel like they're in a corner and they're throwing everything at us, like toilet paper and Q-tips, to try and keep us away. But they don't have anything left. And I don't know what else they can do to kind of keep us from waking up and realizing this is all BS. But I do think a lot more people than they want us to believe are awake right now. And that gives me hope. I'd also like to close out with your thoughts on, do you think that it is inevitable that we're going to have this, apocalyptic future where, we could be looking at basically what it says in the book of Revelations?
Yes, I do think it's inevitable. I was initially told that we had 10 years, and then very shortly thereafter, within 40 days and 40 nights of that point, I was told that we had less than 10 months before the start of the absolute insanity. And I asked why the change? You said 10 years and now all of a sudden it's 10 months. I mean, why does that change? And I was told that, God sped up the timeline, we don't control it. So that if one side speeds up the timeline, the other side has to speed it up to adjust accordingly. So what comes next? I think we have a little bit of a lull. I think we're going to feel like we're winning for a while. We have a little bit more time to bring more people over, to wake more people up. And I think you're absolutely right. More people wake up every day. And I think a lot fewer people are vaccinated than what they say on the news, right? Everywhere I talk to, they're like, 70% of my company is not vaccinated. Only 38% of my old job before they put in the mandate was vaccinated. I just wasn't going to play their bullshit game. So I walked. But I mean, I would say less than 40% of the country is actually probably taking the jab. I think a lot more people are awake than what they want you to know. And we have a little bit more time to wake up as many more as we can. The winter is going to be a dark winter, but that's just because so many people are going to die from reaction to the jab. Their immune systems have been completely decimated. You lose 5% a week after the jab. Essentially, you're going to die from AIDS. That's really what it is. They call it VAIDS now, V-A-I-D-S. It's vaccine autoimmune disease. And a lot of people are going to die over the winter, and that is going to be a horrible, tragic thing. The spring, the summer, the 4th of July is going to be a very, very big day, you know, Independence Day. And that, I think, is going to be the turning point. Not that it's going to get better, but I think that is the actual official start of what's going to happen from there. So
now that the doom and gloom is done.
I am the mother of the apocalypse.
She is. I like to be the one that... not all the time, but I like to bring the hopium back.
Usually I'm the one smoking the hopium pipe.
Yeah,
so.
On this one, I kind of am. I believe that there is a way. I think we have to wake up a whole lot more people. I don't believe for a second that it's not going to be done without bloodshed. I believe that there will be bloodshed for... I think that eventually we will end up going through a second revolution. I've already seen some of the writing on the wall concerning that. Again, Joe Biden, one of the big things he's pushing is vaccine of veterans. Why is he pushing vaccine of veterans? Because
control.
The 3% of the of America that rose up in the American Revolution originally in 1776 was those that had already fought in the the French and Indian War. Had already fought in the War of 1812, had already fought in the first battles under Howe and everyone else in the European invasion, if you will, of the Americas. That has a lot to do with what is going on right now, I think, because those were Americans who had been living here for some time, had fought with the Indians, had then fought against the Indians, and then all of a sudden became subjects of the crown and said, oh, you will do what we say or else we will tax the shit out of you. And the more and more I continue to look, and more I continue to see more people. And it's the one that kind of really set me off one day is I saw a picture, and it was crazy because it was on Fox News of all fucking places. There are a bunch of shills right off the bat, so I'm not even going to continue on with that one. But those shills were showing a flagpole that had the Gadsden flag flying by itself. And if you know anything about what the Gadsden flag really, really absolutely means, the Gadsden flag flying by itself with no American flag above it and nothing below it, that was the signal that the revolutionaries used in 1776 to say, hey, look, we're ready to start fighting now. It's time to, we're going to go ahead and put our arms up, because they weren't allowed to say anything. They weren't allowed to put anything in newspapers. They weren't allowed to put anything. And when I saw Fox News put the Gadsden flag up by itself on a flagpole, I sat there and said, well, that's kind of a signal, folks. I'm not really sure who's not paying attention to it, but this motherfucker is, and I can tell you right now I'm ready to go whenever you all are. But and again, it's the 3% that are going to be the first ones to fire any shots at anybody, and I believe so many more Americans are on board with that. That it scares the elites. I believe that it scares the elites. I believe it scares the New World Order. And I know that the New World Order knows that they cannot take over the rest of the world without taking control of America. And if they can't get a control of America, then you're all fucked. But I think if we can do it in America first, and we can, again, be the last bastion of hope like we've always been for everybody across the world, and this eerily sounds like a fucking Star Wars episode, but if we can be that last bastion of hope for everybody else in the universe and everybody else in the world, then by God, I think we've got something there, George. I'm just saying.
Oh, yes, sir.
Nick comes at everything from a military aspect, obviously, and I come at things from a spiritual aspect. But what we have in common here is that we both think we're going to win. You know, if you go the spiritual route, if you go the biblical route, the end is already written. You know, we know what's going to happen. It's not pretty. It's not an easy path to get there. But we do win in the end. And I don't think it's the end. I think it's the beginning of something new and the beginning of something better, a lot better. I mean, it can't get much worse than what we're in now. Well, I say that, but it can and it will. And Mick thinks we're going
to
win too.
I was about to say Kamala could be president.
Yeah. Good old camel toe herself.
Yeah.
But, you know, and Mick thinks we're going to win too. It's going to be a hard fight. I mean, either path you go down, and they're not mutually exclusive because, you know, we can war and fight on the ground and still be in the middle of a spiritual war between good and evil, because that's really what it comes down to. And now is the time that people have to choose a side. You have to either choose to be on the side of good or choose to be on the side of evil. And the good path is not the easy path. The easy path, the compliance path, the put on a mask, take your booster, take your next booster, take the pill, live in fear, that's the evil path. Don't choose that path. Do not comply.
The hard right over the easy wrong.
For sure, 100%. Man, I agree with you guys so much, and this was amazing information. I'm going to have you guys back on for sure. Before you guys head out, I would love for you to tell us where everybody can find your podcast, if you have any social media and things of that nature. And also, I just want to add, I think we've already won. I think that it's like a chess game that's been lost to them already. I think that we may be 7 or 8 moves ahead, and they just keep trying to position themselves to have the populace believe that they still have a chance to win. But I think cosmically, on a spiritual grand scale, we've already won, and it's all an illusion from now on. But, you know, I think we will have tough times, like you both said. There may be bloodshed, but I think ultimately we will come out in a better place on the other side. But yeah, guys, thank you again for coming on. Let the audience know about your podcast and where they can find you.
Sure. So we're the Patriot Party podcast. We do 4 or 5 shows a week, 2 news shows, which run about 2.5 hours. And then we do a lot of interviews, a lot of doctors, lawyers, politicians, all kinds of great stuff. We throw the occasional conspiracy theory episode in there. We used to do a lot more of those, but they all came true. So now we primarily concentrate on the news because it's even crazier than our conspiracy theories. So you can listen to our podcasts at the Audible version at patriotparty.podbean.com, or you can find us on Rumble. Just look up the Patriot Party podcast. And you can
watch it there.
Yeah, we have a Telegram page. Just look up the Patriot Party Pod Chat is our Telegram page, and that's where our chat room. I do have a news page as well. It's the Patriot Party Podcast. And I'm on Twitter for now, at VLINQ.
I've been removed from everything. So.
Yeah.
Good job. Congratulations.
This is like my 6th Twitter account. We're permanently banned from Facebook.
It's a badge of honor.
It really is.
I'm getting more on Getter. I have an account, but I don't really use it. And Clout Hub as well. I occasionally post videos on Clout Hub, but they make it more difficult by the day. So, so Rumble and the Red Pill Project. So
yeah, you can also find us at the Red Pill Project. And they're out of Denver as well. Another podcast out of Denver. We post all of our stuff to their stuff, and they post their stuff to our stuff, the whole thing. We're kind of a joint venture, become a rather big, they have their own social media bit, and the social
red pill.
And we're on there. I'm on there as much as I can get on there, just to post news and whatever other information I could put out there, talk to people, whatnot. That's about the long and the short of it.
Awesome. Well, Mick, thank you so much for your service. Thanks for coming on. VLIN, thank you so much. We're going to have to definitely do this again sometime. So I will stay in touch, and we'll get another one of these hooked up soon.
Sounds good.
Sweet.
Thank you so
awesome
much for
guys.
Coming on. Amazing.
For sure. And until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening. We'll talk again tomorrow.